News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8.07 on your Tuesday morning. That means it's time to talk to Quinn Hillier with the Advocate in New Orleans. And, of course, you can read his writings at quinnhillier.com as well.
Hey, good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, everybody.
So, plenty to get to, both on the international stage, but also here at home. And another primary Tuesday, too, with all eyes on L.A. and California. I don't think many are expecting maybe a big gubernatorial upset, but Spencer Pratt in that mayoral race, who's a registered Republican but running as an independent, that'll be interesting. And it looks like they're going to runoff, but he has certainly run a pretty fun campaign against Karen Bass. But we have our own election stories to cover as well. And redistricting, Quinn, had that ruling last week from Inasco and that three-judge panel. Marshall, again, appeals to the Supreme Court. Yesterday, Clarence Thomas had requested both sides to give them arguments for why their side deserves to win again in front of the Supreme Court. And I guess we're expecting a ruling sometime soon.
Well, yes, but even that won't be the final ruling. I mean, this whole thing is so complicated and has so many steps that is why, and people might be sick of hearing me say it if they've also seen me on TV, that is why we jumped the gun. That anything we did should have been done for 2028, not 2026, because, you know, it's bounced back and forth between the levels of the courts, and now what is at issue is still not the underlying final argument and decision on the merits of the case. It is on the injunction that the three-judge panel placed on the against going back to the 2023 map that the legislature had done. And even if the Supreme Court chooses not to stay, in other words, not to get rid of the injunction, even then the state could win in the long run. And the state really does have a slightly better chance of winning in the long run than it does in getting the stay from the Supreme Court this coming week. The injunction is still based on the Milligan v. Allen case in Alabama from 2021 and 2023, et cetera. And because of the fact findings of the district court then, which have never been overturned by the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court, at least two of the members, would have to contradict themselves in order to overturn or stay the district court's injunction. The long run is what I expect to happen, and, you know, it's anybody's guess, but I'm not the only conservative out here saying this. Hans von Spakovsky, the great conservative legal expert who you might have seen on Fox News, et cetera, he agrees with me that the elections for Congress are likely to go forward with the 2024 district, the one that gives a second majority black district, and then in the long run you work it out for 2028. I hope everybody can follow what I've said.
Well, and if that's the case, and like you said, quite a few people are expecting the Supreme Court to rule in that manner. I mean, I guess we'd go back to what was on the ballot during the originally scheduled primaries. I don't know if they would have to qualify all over again or if they would just run it back with the exact same candidates or not, but that would again create some issues going into this. I guess my question for you, too, is if the Supreme Court rules this way and says, no, you need to use the same maps you used in that last election, why did they vacate the injunction last month?
Easy, because they had ruled in the Louisiana case, and they had to procedurally, I don't agree that they had to procedurally, but by everything that they've done in recent years, the proper procedure is to say the district court needs to re-examine its own earlier decision in light of our Louisiana decision. And so it sent it down to the district court for the district court to do that job. And that had nothing, as I said, and everybody was dunking on me at the time when the Supreme Court did send it back to the district court, and I went on with Darwin Singleton, and I said, no, this is not on the merits either. This is a procedural step, because they're saying the district court got this case again, and they punted it directly to us. They should not have punted it to us. They should have done their own reassessment. So they sent it down. The district court has now done its own reassessment, which confirmed its assessment from 2023, mm-hmm. which means we're back to the 2024 map unless the Supreme Court acts this week otherwise.
And help me square this too, Quinn, because you know, I look at both of these maps and feel like race was considered when drawing lines for both, whether it's the 2023 map that the Republicans want to use now. That effort, and while it failed, it was intended to make it through the courts and survive that. No. And then the one that, you know, the plaintiffs want to use was drawn with race in mind. I mean, it seems like both of these kind of violate what the Supreme Court's ruling was in Louisiana versus Calais.
Not according to how the district court did it in 2023. The district court in 2023 identified a so-called community of interest in the Black Belt, which is mm-hmm. not a reference to race, as mm-hmm. people know. It's
soil.
A reference to the soil. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a bogus community of interest, and I argued against it at the time. But they said that that community of interest was much stronger than the community of interest of the two southern or the two coastal counties. And so there, by identifying that as a community of interest, they punched that into the computer without any other reference to race. And so they said they did a race-neutral community of interest map. Mm-hmm. So they did not technically use race, and they said that the legislature did. And here's the difference. The legislature, by the lights that the court had set, they actually did. There were the House, the State House, under our own local rep, Chris Pringle, put forth a districting plan that still wasn't a second majority Black, but it made every effort to comply with the exact words of the earlier 2023 or 2022 ruling. Mm-hmm. And it got through the House, and then it got to the Senate, and without any hearings, they threw out the state Senate threw out the Pringle map that at least tried to comply, and they put in their own map that was much more heavily white-oriented. And because they did that, the Supreme Court said, you're not even paying attention both the district court and the Supreme Court said, you're not even paying attention, and the only explanation could be race. Now, I don't agree with that, but that's what they said, and they had 170 pages of fact-finding to back it up.
Yeah.
That's why we're there.
And, I guess we can and you sound like you agree with some of that, too, but I don't know if they explicitly mentioned that they were trying to draw lines for white voters. It seems like it would be more of a partisan advantage they were looking for, which, according to the Supreme Court and these recent rulings, seems like going forward will be fine and dandy. Another question I have for you, too, is, you know, regardless of what the ruling is this week, and I know Attorney General Steve Marshall was asked about this on APTV on Friday night with Todd Stacey, but do you think they try to get a 7-0 map in the future?
They could try to get a 7-0 map in the future. And because the Supreme Court Louisiana ruling was so poorly written, in my estimation, there's really no telling whether the 7-0 map would fly, but it might. Again, it would be nice if the Supreme Court tried to stop splitting the baby and instead came out with something that was clear and distinct, which the even the Louisiana decision was not clear and distinct. But if they go to 7-0, they would have to do it for 2028, not for 2026.
Gotcha. Get to some other news here, and the Tuberville residency requirement. This story continues even after a dominant win in the primary.
There's a hearing coming up now about all this that the Republicans themselves are going to be. Let's talk about that.
Okay, so the Republican Party, as an institution, had sort of scoffed at the residency complaint filed by one of
McFeeder's
opponents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now I think they are looking to try to make sure that they've crossed their T's, dotted their I's, to make sure there's no effective legal challenge from the Democrats. So now they're saying, okay, we are going to consider it without any preconceived notions. Now we're going to hear it. We have a nominee. If we find that he's not qualified, we have the right to replace him on the ballot. Of course, by that time, it has given them the opportunity to go out and prepare the case, look for every indication they can find that Tuberville did actually live in Auburn, even though he didn't. And they will, in my educated guess, they will act like they are taking the residency complaint seriously and hold a hearing in the right way that they should have done before, and then they're still going to rule in Tuberville's favor. But they will have at least made themselves more immune to future lawsuits.
So it's more about appearance.
It looks to me like that's what they're doing.
And then the Democrats can do whatever they wish to do with this whole thing. Republicans can come to a certain conclusion, but the Democrats probably going to be doing a little kicking and screaming themselves, right?
Well, they will. And again, what this doesn't act absolutely negate any lawsuit the
right.
Democrats might file,
sure.
but it provides a little inoculation against any lawsuits.
Uh-huh.
Now the Democrats will no longer be able to say, well, the Republicans didn't even follow their own rules, and their own rules are incorporated into state law via Clause X and Provision Y or whatever. So now it helps inoculate them against a Democratic lawsuit. It is a smart legal move for the Republicans to make.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have a problem with, I mean, Tuberville coached at Auburn for 9 years. He's been senator for an entire term. So I don't have the same issue that many do with this residency thing. But I will say, I guess he was on Newsmax, and I think Lanyap, maybe it was Scott Johnson who pointed this out. He's doing interviews on Newsmax from the Florida home. And I'm like, come on, not right now. Like, put a green screen behind you or something.
I didn't realize that. They got the beach behind him? Like, is it the SEC spring meetings?
Yeah, maybe something like that. But do you think Doug Jones, I mean, how's he going to run this race relative to that Senate race where he was the incumbent? I mean, to me, it seems more like put his name back out there and raise some money. He doesn't really have a chance to win this thing.
I don't think he has much of a chance. He's hoping that the backlash against Trump will become even stronger. It'd have to be awfully strong for a Democrat to win in Alabama. But there also is a difference where people want somebody as governor who they actually see as competent in administrative ability, that sort of thing. Whereas for the Senate, they just want somebody to go up there and represent them with a big, loud voice and to vote right. So people do vote a little different on governor than they do for Senate. Like, that's why Larry Hogan in Maryland, the moderate Republican, won for governor but got crunched for Senate, even though he's popular.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Doug Jones is hoping. I don't think Doug Jones' hopes are going to be realized, but that's what he's hoping.
In the end, Tuberville's going to get through this, and he's going to certainly end up being the governor of Alabama, and he's got traits as a head football coach. He was a leader of a team, a high-profile team. That seems to be his approach when he becomes governor as well, if you listen to what he's been saying.
Well, exactly. And look, your guess is as good as mine on all of this, although I have done pretty well predicting things in the past, like when I said Katie Britt would win when she was only at 9% in the polls. Anybody who thinks Tuberville is not going to win is the kind of person that goes and bets on a 50-to-1 horse. And sometimes 50-to-1 horses win the race, but not very often.
Yeah, there we go. The Belmont is this weekend. Yeah. Speaking of those races.
Right. Coming up.
Okay.
We'll continue our conversation with Quinn on the other side. 251-343-0106. That's the number if you want to hop on the text line.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 826 on Mobile Mornings with Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, the advocate in New Orleans and Louisiana. President Donald Trump struggling with Iran and struggling with Bibi and all that stuff. What do you make of that, Quinn?
I wish Trump would make up his mind. He says that he's just doing normal negotiations. It does seem sort of like you could get whiplash watching them go back and forth between, oh, we're negotiating and we're about to get a deal, to, no, we got a long way before we get a deal, and meanwhile we're going to bomb the heck out of them, but, oh, we're only going to bomb the heck out of part of them, but not all of them. It's sort of confusing to watch, put it that way.
Yeah, and you have, you know, both sides think they have the leverage, and in a way they do. Iran knows these midterms are coming up and the weight that could have on Republicans, and then the future of this, you know, the rest of the Trump term, having Democrats run one or both chambers of Congress would create some real issues. But on Trump's side, I think he really feels this blockade is doing some serious damage. That, to me, is the big question, is how's Iran doing with this blockade, and how much longer can they survive? I'm sure they're getting a lot of help from China and maybe Russia, too.
Well, I mean, so they're probably getting assistance via land because they're not getting much in because of the blockade, much in by sea. But this is certainly not the Colin Powell war fighting strategy of if you go in with everything you've got and get it over with as quick as you can. Who knows whether Trump's right or not? I don't like this ping-ponging back and forth between tactics, but, you know, he's the president.
Yeah, I mean, and didn't Colin Powell's war stretch for like 20 years?
I was going to say.
No, actually, Colin Powell was long gone by then, and he was overruled as to what to do after the initial thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big Colin Powell fan because I thought he was a weasel to let Scooter Libby hang in the wind. That's long ago stuff. But on war fighting, I think Colin Powell, not on diplomacy and not on how he treated other people, but on war fighting, he might have had something there.
Quinn, you treat people so well. People want to reach out to you and read all your stuff. And what can they do to achieve that?
You can either go to quinnhillier.com. You can also subscribe for absolutely free. You can just go Quinn Hillier and The Advocate, or Quinn Hillier at NOLA.com. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, man, you had your Georgetown reunion, huh? Everybody else looked old?
Everybody else looked old. I don't know why.
Funny the way that happens, man.
Yes, congratulations
on that, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bye.
All right, coming up, turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. Second half of our last hour, Mobile Mornings on the way.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. And here we are, back together again. Dalton back from Disney.
Thank you.
You've had it with people, huh?
Yeah, I have.
I mean, you got a little overexposed to the human race down there.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not one to sit in silence very often. I mean, I usually have some kind of audio going on or a TV on in the background. But after a day at Disney, I'm just like, let's shut everything off. Mm. And how about everyone shut up for a little while?
Yeah.
But, hey, we're past that. We're good now.
And so, you know, when I think about it, like if I went to Disney or, well, I could go to a game. I don't think it would flip me out at all, you know, as far as crowds and everything. I'm used to that. But when I think about it, it's been a while since I've been to. But the last game we were at, you and I were there.
Yeah.
Together at the Jags, they had about 5,000. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. But as far as big crowds and all, I guess I would be fine. But as life has kind of turned out, I'm on my own a lot.
Mm.
You know, I have a job that requires me to get up very early. So that means I got to go to bed very early. That means that I just am not around a lot of people a lot of the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mardi Gras is pretty.
Mardi Gras?
That, I mean, depending on, you know, your routine for Mardi Gras, you're going to end up around a bunch of people at some point.
If you see me out in public, I don't think you're going to see me melt down, you know, because there's five people in a room.
I didn't think for me either until hour 8 at Magic Kingdom on a Friday.
I get it.
Got me.
And that's the thing, too. Again, we talked about this yesterday. Because if it happens to me, I simply say, see you at a blank later.
Sayonara.
Irish goodbye, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
I just get out. You had five other adults and two kids that were decision makers, and you had to just simply endure it. So.
Yeah, I overruled them there on that last night. I'm like, we're getting out of here. Speaking of the Irish goodbye, did you see this? And I don't know if Sean, I'm sure Sean knows all about this. He may have even been planning to go to this until I was like, I'm going to Disney for a week. But almost 2,000 people with the last names O'Sullivan and Sullivan.
I think he
do this story? This was in Ireland.
Yeah, so I think he was planning on that.
2,000 Sullivans all met in County Cork last week in the largest ever.
Where else would they meet?
Recorded gathering of people with the same surname. What's the worst that could happen when you get 2,000 Sullivans together in Ireland?
Oh.
But there was another one, I think, in California for Marilyn Monroe. See that? They got 1,000 Marilyn Monroe lookalikes.
Lookalikes?
Yeah, that were dressing up, you know, trying to do the, well, they were looking like Marilyn Monroe with the white dress. And
how
everything.
Many of them were women?
I didn't check the stats. I think a vast majority. But that brings on the question, would you rather hang out with 2,000 Sullivans or 1,000 Marilyn Monroes?
Yeah, I'm going to go in all cap, like a capital B with that. The Sullivans, that could have been a problem.
It could have been.
And people maybe know that my last name is Irish, but I don't think my name is that. It's not like a Sullivan or a Murphy. It's Brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N. The A-N.
Silent.
The A-N, that's what designates it. Basically, that's an Irish name. It has A-N at the end. But there is a golfer on tour now named Brennan.
Uh-huh.
I saw that over the weekend. And every now and then a Brennan will pop up. But
yeah.
There's not going to be any Brennan reunion.
You don't think there's going to be a big Brennan get-together?
It's not going to be a big story when and if it happens.
Well, I'll write about it when it does, and we'll get it out there. Text line, busy, 251-343-0106. Texter here says, they lie. That could be a reference to anything. I think we were talking about redistricting there, and it's anyone's guess how the Supreme Court rules here. I threw it into the old Google AI and just said, what do you think? How are they going to rule? And it basically told me they're unlikely to grant Alabama's request.
Huh.
But again, that doesn't really mean anything. We'll just have to wait and see.
People betting on this?
You know what? I bet.
Yeah.
I bet they are. I don't think so. I don't think that the redistricting Supreme Court decision has made it onto the Kalshi and Pauley market.
Okay.
But there's a lot of other political, and I almost brought this up yesterday. I had the story. There's been a lot of money bet on the Senate race, the Republican primary runoff between Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. And I know Jared Hudson's camp just put out a press release. I guess a new poll came out from Alabama poll that has him leading Barry Moore by about 10%.
Mm.
and 600 likely Republican voters. Let me see if I can pull this email up real quick and give you the exact numbers from the Hudson camp. Here you go. They said, this is from the Alabama poll. Political newcomer Jared Hudson has a nearly 10-point lead over Barry Moore, congressman.
10-point lead.
Said the Alabama poll, and maybe Jeff can give us some more insight. I think the Alabama poll is pretty straightforward. I don't think it's necessarily associated with one team or the other. I could be wrong on that. And this is kind of, it is surprising. Hudson with 48.7% of the vote, Moore with 39.2%. And remember, Moore came out ahead in the primary, in the wider primary before it heads to this runoff easily too.
He had like 43%. Did he not have something like that?
And so I guess this Marshall vote, the way it's splitting into this runoff, if this poll is accurate, a lot of those votes going to Jared Hudson.
How about that?
And so 48.7% to Hudson, 39.2% to Moore, which with my poor math skills works out to about 10%. Yeah, 12% undecided. That would be really interesting. But there's been a lot of money on these prediction markets bet on this race.
Really?
And last I checked, Hudson was way behind in the odds of actually winning this. And it's harder than you think to scroll through the phone and find it while I'm talking. But last time I checked, I think they had Hudson at like 10 to teens percent chance of beating Barry Moore.
Yeah, I think you quoted that yesterday. It wasn't quite dismal, but it was down there. So this poll saying he's 10% ahead, it's kind of out of left field, it seems. I think that Hudson is a very appealing candidate. I don't think that he is well known enough, especially in South Alabama. I think if you got to know him, if he presented himself to you, mm-hmm. like he's done on this show, or came to your civic group or whatever, I think that you would find him to be a likable, appealing candidate. But Moore is a known commodity down here, much more so than Jared Hudson. He's kind of a newcomer.
Yeah, he is. So he is
a newcomer.
Found the Kalshi odds here. So this says in Kalshi, not Polymarket. Mm-hmm. Polymarket has its own. Kalshi, it says there have been nearly $1.3 million wagered in this Senate market. And right now they have Barry Moore with 81% chance of winning that race. So Hudson, the 19%. And that's ever-changing as well. But that poll shows a different story.
Yeah, I mean,
a little more insight into that.
That's a big gap between those two numbers, those two set of numbers right there. Like I say, I think some say, Hudson would have to catch up down here, like really get on the ball in South Alabama. I think Mobile, I don't know if Moore's a slam dunk in Mobile. A lot of people think he is, but others say it's not even worth it. He just needs to build his base in other parts of the state of Alabama that he cannot rally enough
to get the votes.
Mobile, right.
Also, that primary in L.A. today, the mayoral, you have gubernatorial, bunch of races, six states that have primaries today. I think
they do
Iowa and California.
There.
Yeah, jungle primaries.
Yeah.
I guess that's ranked choice voting. I'm not sure if those are one and the same. I know they're pretty similar, but Spencer Pratt, he's been interesting to watch, and I'm hoping that he wins, obviously. He seems to be the only sane person in that race, and you look at the things Karen Bass has done over the years, but for that one, compared to the Senate primary prediction market where I said 1.3 million has been wagered, there's been nearly $40 million wagered for that LA mayoral race on Kalshi, and they're still giving Karen Bass about a 66% chance of eventually re-winning that seat, and Pratt with 25%. But they're saying that, and I think the gubernatorial likely headed to runoffs after today's voting. You get Spencer Pratt in a runoff with Karen Bass. I know he was on with Bill Maher yesterday.
Yeah, Maher kind of, I don't know if Maher endorsed him, but he didn't. He came close.
And he was smoking joints in front of him, which is kind of that Bill Maher thing.
And
he just smokes weed the whole time.
So that's his podcast and not his show. Yeah.
And he was asking Pratt basically about that. And I loved Pratt's answer because he could have easily, changed his view just to win over the Bill Maher
crowd.
Voting crowd.
Yeah.
And Maher was asking him about pot and smoking pot. And Pratt was like, you know, we've got to quit having people smoking weed in front of the kids. Like, I never in my life thought that
would happen.
There'd be a day where someone's going to light up a blunt right in front of a playground and people be okay with that. So even then, he didn't really pander to what Bill Maher was asking him to. And then Maher was trying to hammer him on, like, the specifics of taxes on solar in California.
Yeah.
And Pratt kind of seemed like he didn't know a whole lot about that. And Maher was like, well, you have to know about this if you want to. And Spencer Pratt goes, listen, there are far bigger fish to fry right now. I'll get a solar expert. I'll get someone on my team who can look into that. But you just look at the most obvious problems they have in California right now.
Homeless.
And it's the homeless. It's the government's management of wildfire suppression.
They've got all the fraud they're finding out there now, too. The hills were on fire. The hills, people are still, well, Pratt himself is living in a trailer, correct?
Yeah. And they got him for that, too, because he was staying in a hotel. But I'm hoping Pratt wins. That'll be something to watch today.
Well, it will be interesting. Also, in the two races, that Pratt race and out in L.A., and also the Tallarico Paxton race in Texas, immediately, check out Pratt's videos about L.A., about his opponent. I think very effective. You're going to see them on like YouTube and everything. They're not on TV. They're a little bit longer, maybe 2 minutes in length.
A lot of AI used in it, right?
Yep, and a lot of AI used in it, but I think very effective. And not as much AI, but also in Texas, they really are pointing to the obvious things of how, even though Paxton is a very flawed candidate himself in many ways, personal and otherwise, they're really pointing out how Tallarico simply does not have the values of most of the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they both look very effective to me.
You know, and all eyes on 2028 soon, too. And there's a new Emerson polling survey. So there were reports last week that Trump is not so happy with J.D. Vance, or I guess these were coming out over the weekend, mm-hmm. and that they're trying to push Vance out. You know, I'm not sure what Vance has done, certainly publicly, that would have upset Trump. Who knows? But you look at what Rubio's been doing since becoming Secretary of State, and he'll be before Congress today for the first time since the Iran war began. Rubio will be answering questions about as much. But new Emerson polling survey out on the GOP's potential 2028 primary field, and the numbers have changed in a big way here. 36% of Republican primary voters still back Vance for the GOP nomination. Mm-hmm. Now 35% support Rubio. You have Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who I'm still hoping makes another run, at least in federal political life. I don't know, maybe he'll become a Supreme Court justice if one of these older conservatives gets off the bench here in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll be AG if the Blanche thing doesn't work out. I don't know. But DeSantis is just too good of a leader to leave him off to the side once his run as governor of Florida is up later this year. But DeSantis, along with Nikki Haley, polling at 5%. Who's out there voting for Nikki Haley still? And then 15% said undecided, which remember the Alabama Senate race? That was as high as like 50% undecided 2 months before the vote. But 15% undecided in this Emerson poll. You compare that to February. And again, now they're saying Vance at 36%, Rubio at 35%. Back in February, Vance was at 52% and Rubio at 20%.
Yeah, it's hard to understand what has transpired aside from a war that's not necessarily going swimmingly well. I mean, we're struggling with it. But Rubio has been on he's been at the podium time and time again in the last 6 months now, whereas Vance has really played the role of vice president, meaning we haven't seen or heard much, nearly as much from him.
No, and we've seen a whole lot more of him than we did Kamala Harris.
Sure.
Or even Joe Biden under Obama. And certainly, I mean, maybe Mike Pence was out and about more than I remember. But with Vance, you have this anti-fraud task force.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot. He's been making some trips overseas also So he's been doing more than most vice presidents, but so far, the route that Rubio ended up taking as Secretary of State looks to be more beneficial for his 2028 hopes than being vice president.
Well, who would have known that Rubio would have had so much on his plate? The Secretary of State, I get it. That's always a very active office, but he's been very busy. And in fact, he's doing more than Secretary of State. We talked about that,
yeah,
too.
And I forget all of the roles that he's expected to fill now, but
yeah,
the memes have been great.
Yeah,
putting him in different uniforms and outfits.
Rubio, again, I think he's very sharp. He's very pragmatic. He's very likable. There's a lot to like about Rubio. Mm-hmm. He seems very measured, and you don't see him getting like. It'll be interesting to see. Somebody will try to make an example of him today, I guess, a Democrat or an opponent in front of the Congress. Rubio does rarely comes off looking like the fool, right?
No, he really doesn't. He's pretty adept at those situations.
Yep. 851 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton and Jeff Poor's on the way. We'll run down his lineup for you. It's on the way next.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Thank you for listening. Something to do every day. Some nappy announcements on the way soon?
I'm not sure when those will come out. I guess voting wrapped up Sunday. So, if it's like the California votes that are coming in today, I guess we should know in about 5 weeks.
Fulton County, Georgia. Yeah, they're counting the votes. Jeff on the way, what's he got?
From the Alabama poll, which I was just discussing with that poll that shows Jared Hudson with a 10-point lead over Barry Moore.
That's crazy.
Michael Lowry joining Jeff. So we'll get some answers, the same answers to the questions I was just asking last segment coming up just after 9:30. After 10:30, he'll have Pam Casey on, the Blount County District Attorney who finished third, I believe, in that race for AG.
She did. But I was always enjoy her as a guest. Mm-hmm. I think she won over a good bit of voters. She didn't qualify, but she did pretty well for a statewide election.
A relatively competitive third-place finish for her behind
I thought so.
Robertson and Mitchell. And then Lieutenant Governor candidate John Wall joining in hour number three. Had some numbers on that, too, while we're talking about all of this polling for the John Wall-Wes Allen race. It's a toss-up, according to the new Alabama poll survey, which we'll hear Michael Lowry discussed just after 9:30.
We don't like either one of them?
Let's see. Allen, the Secretary of State, with 42% to Wall's 38%, and nearly 20% of voters still undecided 2 weeks out. Remember, Wall actually came out with the most votes in that primary going into this runoff, and the Trump endorsement certainly helping him there. But now with this polling, looks like Allen holds a tiny lead.
Slight lead. I think that's really too close to call. So Sean didn't make it to the Sullivan gathering, huh?
No, he did not. And I guess this is so the Gallaghers also do this thing in Ireland. So it's always between the Sullivans and Gallaghers, which I believe could be really dangerous.
Yeah, I mean,
get Sullivans and Gallaghers going after each other.
I mean, you know, the old jokes about the Irish drink and they fight and all that stuff, and it's all completely true. But so you say if you gather too many of them in one spot, you're asking for thuggery and trouble and arguments and redheads beating the hell out of each other.
That's basically exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, to be a fly on the wall of the Sullivan.
Well, you don't have to be a fly on the wall. No.
Jim from Sims, does Mobile really need the money from Lime? Yeah, no, I don't think, $20,000 to $25,000 a year really going to add to the bottom line, but we'll see today. City Council discussing that in a new 3-year contract.
Okay. We'll find out. We'll get to the bottom of all that. You just rest your pretty head on the text line. Dan and Don will take care of you. We're back in the morning beginning at 6 a.m. Wednesday show, including Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing actor, writer, playwright. He'll tell us about some books he's authored here recently and what he's doing. He'll be in Pensacola soon with that play that I saw last year, but a new version.
Looking forward to that. Any questions for the Lieutenant Colonel, text him 251-343-0106. Jeff Poor on the way next.